Hello and welcome to this Microsoft Virtual Academy for Africa. My name's Megan Rodemeyer and I work for SchoolNet South Africa. And with me today is Victor Ngubeni from Microsoft. Victor's going to be telling us how to organize and manage ICT for use in the classroom. So Victor, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what this is going to be about?
Yes, hello everyone, welcome back again. My name is Victor Ngubeni, I'm the Partners in Learning Training Manager at Microsoft. And as Megan said, this session or this module is all about how teachers can organize and manage the use of technology in the classroom. There are three main points that we're going to look at in this module. First, we're going to look at the scenario in which a teacher is having or a school owns a computer lab. What sorts of activities a school can use that lab for in order to optimize learning? We're also looking at the scenario where a school or a teacher has a PC or a computer in the classroom. What sorts of activities the teacher can do and maybe also enable students to do in the classroom. And the third one is a bit more general because we look at how to manage logistics and social interactions around the use of technologies. So those are the key three main ideas that will be discussed in the module.
Victor, I think those are three really worthwhile topics. Technology is evolving all the time, and lots of schools are now going for tablets or perhaps are going for laptops in a mobile trolley, or perhaps are even going the bring your own device route, yep, where students bring their own technology to school. But for many schools, the computer lab is the technology that they have. And I think that this session today is going to be showing teachers who have labs how to use those effectively.
Yeah, which begs the questions. In an era where tech mobility is dominating all aspects of our lives, do we still really need labs in schools? You and I work in schools, so many schools across the country, where the only resource that they have is a computer lab. And they must make the most use of the lab in order to survive.
So, I mean, we see some computer labs that are permanently locked, yeah, or perhaps they're being used as storerooms, or they're under a layer of dust, or perhaps the computers are even still wrapped in plastic because, yes, nobody has ever used them. But we also go to schools where those labs are busy, where they've got an, yeah, effective timetable in place, where teachers are in and out and are making use of those resources. So there definitely are pros and cons,
yeah,
of computer labs.
So what I have up on the screen is the argument for and against computer labs. Starting with, you know, the best use for computer labs. These are some of the things that one could look at. You know, computer labs are a good starting point for mass ICT literacy. Imagine a school that is trying to teach learners just basic ICT literacy. You need like a common place where you do it, and the lab is such a perfect environment to do it. And also it's a great environment, it's a great place to do online assessments. You do have schools that have, you know, exams. For example, computer applications and technology schools like CAT schools, only reliable place that they can use for online assessment where things are controlled and there's invigilation and, you know, systems to make sure that this is qualitative, it's a computer lab. So also things like it's easier to share files because in most computer labs they work on a sort of a LAN settings, so it's easier to share resources.
And have like a server.
They work from a server, so it's easier to push stuff from the server into the computers. So also it's effective for what we call teacher-led demonstration. Remember in one of our previous modules, we looked at didactic form of teaching. So a computer lab would be great for a kind of teaching where a teacher is demonstrating something and the kids maybe are following steps.
Especially if there's a a data projector in the computer lab.
Yes.
So the teacher can demonstrate on his or her computer, and the students can then follow on theirs.
Absolutely. And one great thing about computer lab is maintenance. So you're maintaining that set of computers, so you know what you're maintaining, rather than a situation where everybody's bringing their own device, where it might be difficult to maintain those. So computer labs, easy access, and it's easy to support and maintain those. Those are some of the great things about computer labs.
And it's something that the school can provide, whereas a bring your own device situation at schools where children are coming from different backgrounds.
Yeah, somebody can bring a dodgy
access,
device and start.
Or some children just can't afford technology at all.
Yeah.
I was a guest lecturer at a university the other day, and in their lab they had functionality that let me as the presenter see all of the other screens. So that was great. I could check that the students were on task.
Oh, yes, that's the great thing about a computer
doing,
lab.
And the work I'd assigned, as opposed to checking out Facebook. And then the button that I loved was I could freeze their computers. And then they had to listen to me until I unfroze them. So labs are not all bad.
Yeah, some people don't like labs though, and some of the things that they say about labs is that they are restrictive, because, whenever, like control, the teacher is restricting you in terms of what to do, what not to do. So in terms of creativity, some people feel constrained. Some people talk about security, the fact that if you hit the server, the whole system goes down. So that's another one reason that people don't like that, like computer labs. Yeah.
And the desks are the way they are. It's not like students can take tablets and go work outside or walk around the school and take photos. They are where they are. And the security is a big risk. I mean, we've
it
seen
is.
Schools with concrete ceilings and safe doors,
but the
guys just get stolen.
Yeah, they find a way in through the lab. Yeah, somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas a laptop trolley or a box of tablets, perhaps a school could store those in a strong room. Although then the argument is that's more mobile to pick up the box and run away with it.
Yes, sure.
So there are pros and cons, but lots of schools have labs and that's the way it is. So let's talk about how labs can be used.
Yeah, that's a good it's a good point. So it's all about planning for me, and planning. And I've been to schools where they have one lab and that lab is only used by computer students. I don't think that's fair enough, because at the end of the day, all students need some computer literacy. So I think one of the most important things would be to plan lessons, to help teachers or to get teachers to plan lessons where they incorporate technology. Doesn't matter which learning area or which subject, but find bits and pieces of sections where they can at least get the kids into the lab to do something create a movie or search the internet or do something.
I think we're both big fans of ICT integration.
Yes.
As opposed to computer literacy.
Yes.
If students are creating a video as part of a history lesson, or if they're typing in an essay as an English assignment, they're learning computer skills and computer literacy
at the same time. Yeah, but they're learning it in context.
Exactly. So instead of sort of aimlessly typing text out of a book to boost your typing skills, you're learning to type anyway whilst doing an assignment. So it's great when schools are able to timetable their computer lab, that it's not just used by the computer teacher, but other subject teachers can get a slot in there.
But still, what is important is to do some form of an audit of your learners before you take them there, because you may plan a lesson that is it's way, way above their ICT skills level, or something that is below them and is boring them, and you have difficulty controlling them or getting them on the to stay on the task. So it's very important to see or to find ways in which you can maybe gauge your learning activity to the levels of your learners. That's very important.
And if you've done this audit that you're talking about, if learners have to share computers, perhaps mix the abilities.
Yes. Yeah.
Although then you have to be careful that the student with the most computer skills doesn't dominate and not give the others a turn.
But now that's where planning comes back into the picture, because now you can design activities that are more challenging for the clever guys, the ones who will finish the task earlier, and you give them like clever tasks, or a group that is more capable than others, then you give them extra work. So, you know, if time allows, you give them activities that they can do.
Victor, these are all great suggestions, and I think it's about a teacher having the willingness to give.
Yeah, it's
try.
All about the teacher. Yeah.
If a teacher wants to make it work, he or she will somehow make a plan to make it work. It's about having the willingness to give it a go.
And you know, part of the willingness is you know, accepting that you've got gaps. You need to be, you know, upskilled. And this is another time where teachers can now go to the partners in Microsoft Educator Network to connect with other teachers and, you know, download resources, get to learn about new tools and stuff.
I think when we work with teachers, often they qualified as teachers some time back. Perhaps they never had computers when they were at school, or not even when they were at teacher training college or at university. And now they're a little intimidated. You know, these gadgets have arrived. They're
yes.
expected to use them. The younger teachers are perhaps using technology in the class. And their students are saying, you know, we want to do this too.
Yes.
And there's a reluctance to look foolish in front of a class of 8-year-olds who perhaps know more than you do as a teacher. But you were talking about the Microsoft Educator Network, and that's a great place for teachers.
It's a great place for teachers, because all it requires is an email address, like a Microsoft email address. It could be a Gmail. It could be a Yahoo address. It could be a Facebook login address. So all you need is that. And in your you can go there and find resources. In your own corner, you can try and improve your skills if you don't feel very confident to go out in public. And you can start off by doing some, you know, basic activities, easy to use tools, and then you grow like that.
I mean, this whole Microsoft Virtual Academy is all about the Teaching with Technology course that's available on the Microsoft Educator Network. And we keep stressing that we'd like teachers to go online and to actually do this course. And I think that's a great place for teachers to start if they're anxious about using technology. But here on the Microsoft Educator Network, there are other things teachers can do. Tell us more about the Microsoft Educator Network.
So the Microsoft Educator Network is a portal that Microsoft created to support teaching and learning. It's a place where teachers can access learning resources, as in software. They can access lesson plans created by teachers from other places or other countries. More than that, they can get support. So imagine a teacher who downloaded a tool that is new to them. They can get a tutorial for what is the tool and how they can use the tool in the classroom. They can also download lessons related to that tool. So a lesson that another teacher from another country perhaps has created using the tool. More importantly, this is the place where they can connect with their peers. So if you're thinking of a connecting with a teacher from, I don't know, China, a teacher from the US who teaches the same subject as you teach, and you want to do a collaborative project with them, this is the place where you can sort of invite them and say, hey, hang on, come on, I see you're a teacher who teaches the same subject as I teach. Can we connect and get our kids to collaborate?
So there's lots there. There's the professional development, there are the free tools, there are the tutorials, there are the learning activities. Is there any cost?
No cost to it. So all teachers need to do is to have an email address to start with. And with that email address, they'll go in and create a profile of themselves. To take them 5 minutes to do it. And from there on, they just sign in and get tools. And speaking of tools, I've got a sort of an overview of a couple of tools that teachers can upload. I'm a geography teacher, so you'll hear some interesting geography related tools. Here's a tool called NASA Be a Martian. Here's a tool that teachers can download and get students to use the tool, and they get updates and sort of feeds from Mars, this rover that is in Mars. So really exciting.
I mean,
too.
How great would that be for a primary school class learning about space?
Space, what's going on in Mars. Here's another one called Mars Rover Curiosity. This tool teaches the kids the rover that's in Mars now, sort of the different parts and what its capabilities are, and it's a really nice tool on a touch-enabled tablet, because you can zoom in and out into the rover and explore different parts of the rover.
And star chart, this looks like a virtual planetarium.
Yeah, it's a virtual planetarium. Kids can view, can explore the universe, the solar system, and really take a journey into different planets, and a virtual journey, by the way, and it's a really nice one too.
So those are lots of great tools for geography teachers or primary school teachers, but this one, OneNote, that can be used by anyone.
It can be used by anyone. It's a great app. Now, this is based on OneNote's application as part of Microsoft Office, but this is an app, and it enables students or teachers to take notes and gather notes, meaning pictures, video clips. They can write if the tablets are have got the stylus and are write enabled freehand. And the great thing about the tool is it connects directly to SkyDrive. So whenever you create notes, and as soon as you close your notes, it syncs up with your notes that are on OneDrive.
So no more the dog ate my homework.
No.
Because
you create your notes. The moment you stop, they're up in the cloud.
So even if something happens to your device, you still have your OneNote notebooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Skype is one of my all-time
favorites. Yeah, it's a great one. You use that quite a lot. And you and I use
Skype contacts. Yeah. We chat to one another. We can share our screens. We can send one another documents quickly. But it's also a great tool that can be used in the classroom for classes to connect, for children to get to speak to an expert, a child in another country.
You spoke of Mystery Skype in the last module. Yeah.
So Skype's a great tool. I've never heard of this one though. My Study Life. That looks
so. My Study Life. It's a tool that could be ideally used by students. And as the name suggests, Study Life. So you can download your homework onto the app. You can download your calendar reminders for homework, and it syncs up. So first you need to create an account. so that whatever device, let's say you download a homework task, whatever device you pick up, you would be able to access that task and remind us and all of the functionality.
So really I think this one would be great for high school age students or
university students
who really want to take responsibility for their own learning, map out when their exams
plan them.
A sort of study timetable so that they aren't leaving things to the last minute. I think that one looks really useful. And this Novamind mind mapping,
as the name suggests, is for mind mapping. It's similar to sticky sorter. Yeah, so you can create a quick mind map for that.
Yeah. So that's nice for creating study notes, or perhaps planning an assignment or an essay. And learners have different ways of learning. You get visual learners who might like to see something diagrammed out to aid their learning.
So
these are some great Windows 8 apps. And what's nice is you can access them through the Microsoft Educator Network, you can also see some tutorials for using them.
Of course, and the link is there, www.pil-network.com.
So we do hope that the teachers watching will sign up. But in fact, if they are doing the Teaching with Technology course, they already have signed up. Now it's a case of exploring and having a look at what's there. Another tab that's great on the Microsoft Educator Network is all around communities and discussions.
And you can see there are different community groups there. And these are global groups, remember? And the great thing is you can create a localized group. So go into the broader community group. Let's say you're doing teacher training at your school. All you need to do if you want to create a small community of that training is to go to the Microsoft Teacher Trainers and go there and create a small group of people that want to talk to each other and share experiences about their work.
What I really like about the bigger groups is they're led by experts in different fields. So there's one on gaming, one on project-based learning, and it's almost like going to a really great international conference because you get the thoughts and ideas of leaders in those fields. But you actually have an opportunity to contribute to the discussion if you want to do so. Let's talk a bit more about the teacher professional development that's available.
That's the biggest advantage of the network, the fact that you can go there and learn. And the way these courses have been designed, they've been designed so that there's tracking. So if you start today, go into the course, launch it, like sort of start the course today, and you stop at module one, task four. Tomorrow when you log in, you start from where you stopped previously. So, you know, you don't have to start all over again. So it tracks where you have stopped. And it's very interesting in the sense that you and I could be doing the same course, but would be most probably the tasks, the assessment tasks would be different.
So it's personalized.
It's a lot more personalized, yeah. So that's where you need to go in order to download the courses. You'd go to professional development and go to courses. And as you can see, that's where you can find the course that we're doing today, Teaching with Technology. There's the other one, Teaching with Technology Basics. What I normally do when I do trainings is to get, if I don't have much time, I get people to complete that one because you can complete that within 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
And then I say, now that you have an idea what Teaching with Technology course is all about, go now and do and finish the main course.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I use them.
I think what's great about online learning is it really takes away the excuse of teachers not being lifelong learners.
Yes.
They can't say it's expensive because these courses are all free. They can't say they don't have enough time because you can do a little bit.
Yeah.
They can't say there's nothing for them because there are at least 6 different courses to choose from. So there's bound to be something where you could learn something new.
I think the challenge with online, one of the main challenges with online courses is finishing.
Yes.
People do start, but they need to be motivated to finish. So that's why it's a good idea to maybe pay school or per district, you could get people to start and maybe help them create a community. So a community that's for that group, so that they keep talking to each other, motivating each other until they finish the course.
For sure, and obviously at the end, there's the incentive of the certificate,
yes,
which a teacher could download and print out and add to his or her CV, or display in their classroom to show their kids that they're an up-to-date with a teacher.
Absolutely.
And they get the badge on their profile on the Microsoft Educator Network. So those are some added benefits, but you're right.
And by the chance, in South Africa, we're talking to the regulator, the
SAIS. Yes. So soon the Teaching with Technology course will be accredited by the South African Council of Educators. So teachers will get professional development points for completing this this course. So that's really great. They get recognition for keeping their skills up to date. Victor, you've already told us how to join the Microsoft Educator Network, but let's just remind the viewers in case they didn't catch that.
Yes, so the site to go to is www.pil-network.com, and that's all you need to sign up. It could be a Microsoft email, or it could be Office 365, it could be a Gmail, it could be a Facebook, or a Yahoo email account.
Okay.
That's all you need.
So sign up if you haven't signed up already, and get your colleagues to join too. Victor, let's talk a bit about managing ICT resources in a classroom environment. What can teachers do?
Well, there are a number of things that they can do, but on the course they talk about a scenario whereby a teacher is working in a classroom where there is a PC that's connected to the internet, and talk about possibilities that you can do. Things like you can use the computer lab to supplement his teaching and learning. So, for example, get kids or first himself or herself, the teacher can maybe present from the PC, or do some internet searching while in the classroom, or also get some kids to use the PC. So not many possibilities when the class is too big, but definitely it's a resource that cannot be ignored, and it's a resource that can be used very effectively if a teacher knows what they're doing.
And at schools that are short of funds, often that's all they have is one desktop or one laptop per
in a
teacher.
Classroom. Yeah.
But a teacher can use that for class administration.
Yeah, of course.
And even that's a good start, because the teacher is building computer skills, getting more computer literate, and growing in confidence, which leads to starting to incorporate it into lessons, making those PowerPoints, showing those videos, and occasionally letting learners use the technology too.
And speaking of, you know, teachers or a teacher in a school where there are very few resources, I created a scenario up on the screen, a scenario where a history teacher is teaching a large class with very few computers. And he wants the kids to create digital stories, maybe movie, using Movie Maker or Photo Story or some similar software. And I'd like us to discuss briefly about what that kind of teacher can potentially do in that kind of environment where he has large number of students to work with, but very few ICT resources.
So sadly, all too common, the teacher just says it can't be done.
I don't have enough. Yeah, we hear that quite a lot.
I don't have enough.
Yeah.
But our Mr. Jones is not going to be one of those teachers.
Yes, yeah.
What can he do? I think group work is perhaps the way to go.
Group work, I think, is perhaps the way to go. But very important that it's structured and maybe, you know, we talked about collaboration. Good ways for kids to collaborate is when they know what each one is doing in the group, and it's focused and they're doing a task that's engaging. So you could have perhaps five kids gathering around one PC. They use the PC interchangeably, sort of kind of, you know, they alternate in using the PC, or they have roles. So in a group of five, each one is performing a different role. Maybe one kid will go out into the community to do some research. The other kid will present the final product. The other kid will operate on the machine. And so they're working in groups, doing different things, but contributing towards one product.
So the classroom management is a bit more challenging, but a teacher can think it through.
Yeah, sure.
He or she could even decide that today these groups are going to use the computers.
Yes.
And these two groups are going to do another part of the assignment that doesn't involve the computers.
But it would be important to keep sort of a journal of what happened previous, so that next time you change, if I was using the computer the last time, the next time it's my friend who's doing that and I'm doing something else.
For sure, because you don't want the students that have some computer skills getting better and better, and the students with fewer computer skills, perhaps who don't have technology at home, getting fewer opportunities to build those skills.
Yeah.
Victor, the example we've been talking about now is a one device to many students setup, but sometimes we also have one-to-one setups. Can you talk us through the difference?
Yeah, you have different setups. So you have a setup where each learner, that's a luxury setup, where each learner is assigned to their PC. So. And you also have situations where one PC is serving a number of students. So a teacher needs to know what environment exists in their school so that they can plan for their lessons relevantly.
I mean, sometimes a one-to-one setup's not ideal, though, because each student can just do his or her assignment and not collaborate or communicate with class.
There are situations where one-to-one situations is useful, like when they do online exams, where every person needs to be working on their PC because. The assessment is for them individually. So one-to-one can be very useful in those kind of situations.
And obviously a teacher would get nothing done if they made every activity a group work activity. Sometimes students do need to do their own work, or perhaps they need to sit at their own device but collaborate digitally.
Yes.
So maybe work on a shared online document, or be able to email back and forth, but each have their own device.
Yeah. So maybe let's summarize the module.
And give us some tips.
Yeah, great tips. So it's all about planning, for as far as I'm concerned. You need to, as a teacher, know what you're going to do in the computer lab with the students. Sometimes you may want to work with small groups while the larger group is doing a different activity, depending on what you're doing and their levels as well. Very important is to consider the suitability of various technology and hardware resources. You can't plan for something that your lab can't support. So it's very important that you know what your lab environment is capable of so that you can plan appropriately. Also, logistics. Very important that you can't just bomb into the lab and start doing stuff without making sure that it fits within the program of the school. So I would advise schools to have sort of a booking, a calendar where they book the lab so that there's no confusion regarding the use of the lab. And scaffolding is very important, right? So if you want your students to create a movie, they need, and they have not done this for the first time, so they need to be assisted in how they can create this. So maybe you demonstrate to them, or you show them, this is a great, great movie, and then they learn from that. And it's very important that the teacher is able to see or anticipate the gaps before the lessons and plan for how they can fill those gaps for kids to move from one level to the next level.
Those are some great tips, Victor. And I think it all boils down to teachers who want to make it work, can make it work. We'd encourage them to join the Microsoft Educator Network, to look at the resources that are there, to get lesson ideas from there. And once they've produced something successful, to share that learning activity with the community.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that brings us to the end of this Microsoft Virtual Academy, but this is not the last lesson in this series.
You'll be doing the last one?
Yes, so that's next.
Yeah.
What's it, professional development?
Yeah, how technology literacy and technology can support teachers' professional development. How teachers can use technology to upskill themselves.
So I think that builds on nicely with what we've been discussing now. And I do hope that teachers will join us.
Yes.
We'll see you then. Bye.
And go away. Bye.